Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. And she uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Healthy Tuesday. Nice to see you, Brad.
Nice to see you, too, even though it is far away. Where are we going to today collectively?
Today we are collectively celebrating endings and new beginnings, transitions, and some rules for behaviors that we should be following as parents. That's the general idea. But I've been looking at all of the great pictures from the graduations that have happened over the last couple weeks, high school graduations, college graduations, preschool graduations, which I totally don't get, but maybe we'll talk about that later. But just the whole celebration of transitions from one point in our life to another. And we're also, you know, getting into the wedding season as well, which is another life transition that requires a real change in how we perceive ourselves in the world. And so I was thinking about my own transitions, being for college and graduating from college and moving into their young adulthood. And now, you know, Kirsten being married for almost 10 years. This year is Kirsten and Brian's 10th anniversary, which makes me feel ancient. But of course, you know, our grandchildren are 7 and 2, so I guess I am. But all the things that I've learned along with, you know, being a professor and being a therapist, and I feel like I'm perennially a college student because I just watch my students come through every 4 years. And one of the things that we've talked about in the past, but I realized we hadn't for quite a few years, is what happens when our young people go away. They leave for college or they sit out for a job somewhere else. They move out of their home, their childhood home for the first time. What happens to our roles and our relationships between parents and children? And what is our job as parents in helping our children prepare to be independent? And how does our relationship also change? And what I've noticed over the course of the last couple decades is how we've changed how it is that we launch our children for many reasons. And we're going to talk about that in depth today. But a couple of things that kind of stand out is, you know, the economy makes it challenging for anyone to live independently. You know, we have a higher number of multi-generational households right now than we've had since the Depression, since the Great Depression. So it's becoming more and more common for kids and adults and grandparents to be kind of housing together, to sharing expenses and resources. And there's also a lot of research that backs the idea that we do better when we live in community, when we have a support system there and readily available to help each other. So that's a positive. But the other thing that switched is that parents are having a more difficult time allowing their children to become adults emotionally, economically, in some ways, the best they can. But it's hard to describe kind of the subtle difference between, yes, parents are encouraging their children to be independent and go to college. They're helping them to set up their careers. They're wanting them to do well in the world. They're wanting them to, you know, have their own thoughts and be independent. But there's almost this infantilizing of adults because parents are afraid that their kids are going to struggle or suffer. And somehow we've developed this idea, this cultural parenting idea, that if our job as parents is to be successful, our children should never suffer. That we'll know we've been good parents if our children never have anything upsetting happen. And that, unfortunately, has had a reverse impact, unintended consequence, in that you have a lot of young people who don't have the resilience, the bandwidth, the self-confidence, the self-esteem to make adult decisions and to live with adult consequences. And one of the examples I can give is that this quarter, for some reason, back up, and this is going to strike a nerve with some of you, and I understand, we'll live through it together. But in my syllabus at school, I state that I am a fairly generous grader. I actually am. I'm a very generous grader because a lot of it is subjective. So when you get to the end of the quarter, if you're 1 point away from an A or a B or whatever it is you hope you get, I don't change your grade because you had a lot of opportunities to do better throughout the quarter. And every quarter I'll have one, maybe two students who think that they are above that policy and will still write me a note and say, but I was so good. And it was 1 point. This quarter, I had almost 15 students send me emails. And half of them said, my parents said I should go ahead and reach out to you anyway.
Wow.
Yeah. And so my response inside was first, because your parents asked you to do this and you did it, tells me that you didn't get a lot out of my class, family psychology, which was all about learning to be independent. Because there's a very subtle difference between autonomy and disconnection. And I think a lot of parents and families are struggling with understanding the difference between what it is to be autonomous, to be individuated, and what it is to totally disconnect from families. And I think a lot of people have a fear that when their kids go away or the child fears leaving themselves, that if they don't talk to their parents every 5 minutes or see them or know they exist, that they feel disconnected, that they don't have any bond with them anymore. And that feels frightening. And so when we talk about the importance of being autonomous and making adult decisions, a lot of people equate that with being asked to separate from and not have contact with their family. And so today we're going to talk about how can you help yourselves as parents and as children and young adults and grandparents to have autonomous experiences, to make decisions and choices and mistakes, and still feel connected to your family, because it can exist. But right now we're so overly connected and involved, and the smartphones make it extra easy to do that, that we have a lot of very lost, wandering souls who might even be living at home with their parents, but are lost and wandering because they're supposed to be doing something else developmentally, and they're not quite sure what it is because no one's prepared them for that. So that's where my thoughts are today. And fortunately, I have a guest who's going to be joining us who is an expert in this area. Jill Avery is a family empowerment educator who coaches parents, teens, and young adults and helps them to create meaningful and enjoyable relationships. So between the two of us, we decided to come up with 10 tips to help parents and young adults make this transition successfully. And the fun thing is, Jill and I have not compared notes. So I have no idea what it is she's going to say. And she has no idea what I'm going to say. And in all honesty, I'm not sure what I'm going to say yet. So it will be fun to see where we go. So if you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And you can be part of the conversation after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can follow us on Instagram or Facebook, and you can get information about upcoming shows or leave me a message through those venues. Or you can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org under the News Talk tab, or podcast our show and listen at your convenience. Just go wherever it is you find your podcast, search A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and there we are. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back to visit with Jill Avery. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Welcome today, Jill Avery. Thank you for taking the time to hang out with me.
Oh, my pleasure. Great to be here.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about you before we jump into our conversation. So Jill actually began her career working in the education department at Apple, helping the K through 12 students learn about and get computers into the classrooms. And then after a decade of that work, transitioned to her own path, kind of stepping out into her own power, and developed her first award-winning self-empowerment series for toddlers called All By Myself. Side note, though, Jill, I don't know anyone more empowered than toddlers. So maybe someday we'll come back and talk about that as well. And then since that first program, she's developed a life launch curriculum for teens and young adults and an online parent coaching courses. So she's been very active for over 20 years, kind of working with these different populations, helping them to navigate what we're going to talk about today, which is the ever-changing rules of engagement when it comes to parents and children and young adults. Because one of the things we probably hear most commonly from parents is, I don't want to do it the way my parents did. So unfortunately, people go 180 and do it the opposite of their own parents, which means they've thrown out a lot of babies with the bathwater, and now we're going to have to find our way back. Jill also spends time as a lecturer at the Canyon Ranch Wellness Resorts in Tucson and Woodside, offering these empowerment programs to people who are at their resorts. And then besides that, she's the mother of two young adults. She's a hypnotherapist and an Ironman athlete, which is mighty. But that's a whole nother show into itself. I'm sure that just that scratches the surface a little bit, but I'd like you to tell us, what is it that gets you out of bed in the morning to do this work?
Well, it's a great question. The way that I explain it is this empowerment journey is not something that I do. It's not a job. It really is. It's just who I am. I have came out of the womb in this way. I just have always been interested and fascinated, even when I was a child, looking at people, these kids, and always being rooting for the underdog and tapping into people's potential. So I have stories that go way back to when I was, 3 years old. So I think it's just, I'm in the zone, and it is why I get out of bed.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that the Ironman training has a lot to do with your desire to be your best and help others as well, because that's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah. It's funny, the Ironman, I did it when I was 46 years old. I am now 58 and I didn't do it. I don't really like biking, swimming, or running. Okay. I don't.
Okay. Yeah.
And people always laugh about that. It wasn't about that. It was about doing something that I knew seemed impossible, and to be a part of this community of 1% of the people doing something like that. So, but what it did, and which is the backbone of what I teach and what I empower, is the dynamic duo, is what I call it, is the desire and discipline. If you don't have those two lined up and those married together, you ain't going anywhere at all. So that was my showcase of, whoa, I had the desire and discipline to do this Ironman. Because right now I have great desire to do another one. Zero discipline. Will not happen.
And so what kind of drive did you have to put together these programs? I mean, that's a big leap to leave the corporate world and say, I trust myself.
Yeah, it was really easy because I became a mom. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I became a mom, I had different goggles on and a whole different view of how I was going to raise my kids. And I started noticing the ecosystem of how different it was from when we grew up. I mean, I feel like I lived in the golden years growing up in the 70s and 80s. And so that kind of spurred me on to kind of get involved with kids. And that's when I put together the All By Myself toddler, the empowerment of, because my son at the time was not quite three and my daughter had not even, I was pregnant with Autumn. So and I was just watching how these kids, they learned by watching other kids do things. And that was like, well, I want to do what Johnny does, and the power of, I can do this all by myself. So that's when I had that great vision, and I wrangled two of my former Apple employee friends, and we decided to do that. But it just, you mentioned it before, we're evolving. So the gals and the guys that I was working with way back when they were toddlers are now between 26 and 28 years old. And I'm still, I've evolved with them, and I'm still empowering them on the different phases of their life. So it's been because of the ever-changing ecosystem that I got involved.
And it's interesting because the complexity of our social system with the introduction of the internet and the computer in the 1990s really changed everything for parents. And because that's pushback that I get quite often is, you know, there wasn't really a golden time of parenting, because if you look at the parenting of the 60s and 70s, no one was paying attention to what anyone was doing. And it was very emotionally vacuous for kids. So there can be arguments all the way around. But that idea that, you know, how parents were engaged with their children in a day to day fluctuated a bit between, you know, 1900 and 1980 something. It fluctuated a bit, whether kids were to be seen or not heard, or, you know, what discipline looked like. But it wasn't as vastly different as the change in the 1990s when computers were introduced, which is ironic. And we, you know, that you worked for Apple introducing computers, and now you've spent 20 years having to help people navigate how much that landscape has changed how parenting works.
Oh yeah, I don't like to say that technology is the only culprit, but it certainly is. It plays a huge part in it, because when I was raising my kids, my son was born in 97 and then my daughter in 2001, I still saw the shift of parenting. I wasn't parented this way. I was so involved. I would go to the park and be sitting there and watching and making sure that my son played with that child and make sure that he made it across the bridge. And everyone, the parks were packed with parents and their snacks. And are you thirsty? And oh my God, it was preposterous. And the fact that I knew better, I was still hovering because I had such joy of watching this unfold. But it kept continuing, right? So I felt it was kind of pre-technology. That's why I want to say, no, parents. This started way before the technology hit. Now it's just this, you know, fire hose of like complexity. So, I almost forgot your question about Apple, but anyway.
No, but I'm glad that you pulled that in there, because yes, we're kind of juxtaposing two things together. Is that the parenting kind of shifted with I became a mom the first time in 1985. And so that was a lot of the shift of, I'm going to be way more engaged in my children. I remember taking a parenting class at Cal Poly in 1986, because I had no idea what I was doing. So I thought, well, I'll take a parenting class. And the instructor said, you know, parenting is much different now. It's not like when you were a kid and your mom just drank wine with her friends in the house. Now parents are really involved. And I was so like shocked by that. What do you mean? And her whole curriculum was about what I would consider now over-parenting, just being way over-involved and at the school and setting up the play dates. But it was also bumping up against that first wave of the feminists going to the workforce. So she's teaching an over-involved parenting style, but with the idea that it didn't matter how much time you spent with your child, it was all about the quality of the time. So basically with the parenting of this era that you and I came into was that you're going to be in the corporate world working your 10, 12 hours a day, but if you do 15 to 30 minutes of good amount of time with your kids, that'll count as parenting. And so those two things really were conflicting. And so you have parents that are now working big jobs and trying to overparent and are exhausted. But then you add the internet and the computer in there. And the only reason I bring that in is because the ability to be overly monitoring your children became larger.
Oh, it's become, the pendulum has swung so far. And it has increased, because what you just said, is piggybacks right on the exact where the apex meets of these women, right? We all of a sudden have these high power jobs, and then we're now having children, and we want to stay home for that little window of time. So now at the school, you have all of these kind of these women who, they're fabulous. I loved these women. But now they're in these volunteer roles, and they've left their CEO jobs or their director jobs, and they are running these tight ships for this power. And all of a sudden, the PTA is I mean, it was like on steroids. People were overachievers. We had all these docents, right? Art docents, music docents, all of these people on the campus in elementary school. I mean, I was wading through. Hey, I was right there. Huge offender. Because I thought, hey, you know, this is such a special time in life, and our parents didn't do this, and I'm going to do. Oh my God! So I witnessed the chitter chatter gossipiness too that comes with all the moms were all sitting at the benches, tables waiting for the kids to get out, and we all have their snacks and their drinks. And I always tell the parents that I work with, it's not your children's fault. We created this ecosystem, and we're not enabling them, we're disabling them. Mm-hmm. So it's been fascinating, and it is still increasing. The college, I work with my sweet spot are high school and kids in college or taking a gap year between, you know, 14 and 26. Mm-hmm. This stuff is still happening. The parents are checking the grades. The parents are emailing about their professors. They're driving down with a cooler of their favorite sushi place to drop off at college. They're giving their kids a housekeeper once a month to kind of help. We are absolutely overparenting and disabling 100%.
And it is a conundrum, Jill, because I loved parenting. I still love being a grandma. So that is a hard pill to swallow too, is that it's so much fun to spend time with them and be involved with their sports, but to find that cutoff space where then they get to just be themselves, or then we start backing away a bit. And I think that's probably where we're going to go today, is talking about when does the backing away start? Because parents' involvement in junior highs and elementary school in many ways is formative. The kids feel secure. They make their friendships. I get that. But I think maybe we would both agree, then you have to start stepping back. Then there is that piece during high school where parents need to let their kids fumble, fall, fail, fall apart under our eyes, our guidance in some ways, and learn how to get back up. Because what I see happen is they get to college and the kids have never fumbled or failed or fallen apart. And so they run into their first professor that says, no, I won't bump your grade up, even if you have a point. And they don't know how to respond. And so I guess my question to you is, where do you think the stepping back needs to start happening? And how does that look? Or do you believe that that's part of the issue?
Well, I personally believe, my sweet spot is I love working with teens and young adults because my first language is sarcasm. So I have to work with that age group. But it starts way earlier. We're talking pre-kindergarten. We're talking as soon as they're able to walk and able to have use their words. There's a great analogy that was given to me years ago that I go back to, and I try to explain this to the parents, because I believe the earlier the better, because their first training ground is at home. This is where they have to learn. This is where you want them to fail the most. This is where they become skilled. They become self-competent. They know about themselves, right? And it's that analogy of, I think it was when kids were able to bring in, they got to see a live chick be born. And they had it under the warm light, right? And they could see the egg, you know, popping up, you know, and the chick is trying to get out, and you can see that the egg, the shell is moving, and you so want to help, right? You want to like pick it, and oh, if we just crack a little tiny hole, it'll. And the reason you don't is because if you help that little baby chick who needs to build muscle, who needs to have that movement, it's going to come out weak, and it's going to die because it hasn't developed its muscles to fight with that eggshell. It's the same concept. We rob our children with great intention, okay? Mm-hmm. Great intention, but we rob them of having meaningful experiences and figuring out who they are on their own terms. And it's okay to fail. Oh my God, celebrate the failures. That's life. We need these kids to be life smart, heart mm-hmm. smart, mind smart, not just grade smart. There's no shortage of smart people. Mm-hmm. So I want people to focus on that as early as possible and go out and play device-free, because technology is not going away. No. So we need to figure out how to build a healthy, balanced relationship with technology.
And yes, for parents who are raising young children to, again, have ways they can enjoy it and have a blast and go to the soccer games and, you know, go to the park and play with the kids, but to find the opportunities to allow their kids to pack their own snack on soccer game days and to make sure that their cleats are in their bag and they don't get to play in the game the day that their cleats weren't in the bag. Like those, I think that's the subtle parenting changes that got covered up, because I hate the back in my day statements, but I'm going to use one. But if we showed up at the soccer field on our bikes without our stuff, no one was going to drive home and get it for us. And so you learn very quickly to get more organized. And I think because we don't want our children to ever feel sad or miss out on something, we project a lot of our own feelings onto them, that those are subtle things we could do as parents to help. You know, when we talk about helping children develop resilience and skill sets, it's the small intent, you know, consequences that they live with that helps them build resilience. I just don't want anyone to think that we're saying we're going to throw your kids out into the world like a young chick to, you know, to flap around the world. But built into the way we parent has to be the opportunities for development.
What 100%. I mean, it's not a joke when we talk about everyone gets a trophy era. I was there, and I was horrified. And then we wonder why our children don't appreciate and don't value hard work. It's like, well, everyone gets a trophy. I have very few trophies, and I played sports my whole life, and I worked my ass off. And those trophies mean something to me, right? And I try to tell parents, and I'm going to tell you right now, I did not do this. I regret that I did not do this, okay? But if I could go back in time, boy, hindsight is 20/20. Because what I coach my parents now, the parents I work with, is this have to be 5 days a week, but maybe start with one day a week of where the kids, they make their own breakfast, they have to make their bed, they have to pack their lunch, do not tie their shoes. Start small. Right? Start small. And then by the time they get into kindergarten, boy, are they empowered, because they know how to carry their own backpack, pack their snack. They become self-sufficient and reliant, and they're happier, calmer, more peaceful children. We're just adding to the ecosystem of anxiety. My son, who is incredibly, he's just an amazing human being, but he said something really horrible that was horribly true to me. He said, you know, Mom, we were talking about doing laundry, and this was several years ago, maybe five, six years ago. And I got irritated about the laundry situation. I'm like, why don't you just, you know, get your stuff done and get on with it. And he's like, Mom, you taught me so well that you do everything, you know? And I thought, you know what? I did. Because I wanted it done right. I wanted it to be done on my time. I didn't want him to stink. I didn't want him to, right? It's, we do all of these things and we have great reason, but boy, what a fail. So I say, parents, pull back and let your kids get these life skills, self-sufficient skills, prepare them for liftoff to the real world.
Well, and that is from the minute we bring them home, we're preparing them to leave. And I think that's also a hard pill for people to swallow, that the minute we bring them home, we're trying to get them ready to go out the door. And so that is the dance of the parenting and wanting it to be fun for everyone and everyone to feel good about being in the home. But it's interesting how much research supports that toddlers love helping, that they have this innate desire to have chores and have responsibilities and feel a part of the families. And when we don't take advantage of those 5 to 10 years, 5 to 10, or even, you know, 3 to 10, when kids naturally want to participate and feel valued, if we miss that, they lose that. And then you've got irritating teen syndrome. And so I think that would be helpful for parents as well to understand that it's not that we're burdening children with chores and things they have to do. They actually, when they're young, love it. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And my guest today is parent empowering coach, Jill Avery. And we're getting to talking about what are the things we need to do as parents to help our children feel successful and autonomous once they leave home. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I took my love and I took it down. I climbed a mountain and I turned around. And I saw my reflection in the snow-covered hills. Well, the landslide brought me down. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And so, Jill, I want to jump into kind of our goal for today was with all of the graduations and all the young people that are going to be moving out of home, of their homes for the first time, either to college or to work or a service year, wherever they're going to go, that there has to be some rules on parents' interactions with their children, young adults, and how that relationship changes. And you and I had said, let's come up with 10. So do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first.
Hey, throw it out there.
Well, and I also want to say to parents, look, this is an ever-evolving journey. And at any time, you can make a better decision and a better choice. I call it perpetual arrival. You have this amazing opportunity. So I love Stephen Covey, and I use this as the backbone for the rules of my life and for everyone that I coach, which is, hey, drum roll, begin with the end in mind. You have to ask yourself, parents, what is that vision for you? And usually it is universal, to have healthy, whole, thriving children and those relationships with your children. So when you begin with the end in mind, it helps you shape what you say yes to, what you say no to. And it sounds simple, but simple does not mean easy. But you have to start with yourself first. If you want your children to have a great thriving life, then what can you do to support that? And it's never going to be to disable them by taking the reins of their life and feeding them of what you think they should do. They need to think on their own and they need to live on their own. And they need, that's that meaningfulness that we're looking for, that purpose. So begin with the end in mind is my number one.
I like that. If we have an understanding of where it is we'd like our children to be when they leave home, it really helps to inform all the things we need to teach them starting when they're 2 years old. You should have a list of all of the skills that your kids need to learn before they leave home. And believe me, you won't get through the whole list, no matter how much you try. But yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I think what you started to say also is parents, our best teaching tool is how we live our own lives. And so if you want your children to thrive, you need to thrive and live a life that they, you would be proud that they themselves were living.
We are their ultimate leader. Mm-hmm. We are think about our own childhood. Most people, and you being, you know, Dr. Elizabeth Barrett, having therapy sessions, people are trying to, they always go back to their childhood. They're trying to, you know, heal the wounds and try to get their old parenting, this generational trauma. We get one childhood. And parents, this is our shining moment and our most impactful moment of how we contribute to a better world.
And I think we've overused the word generational trauma, because part of the whole experience of childhood is experiencing a lot of losses and letting goes and disappointments, so that we build that sense of resilience. And then by the time we leave home, we can handle it when we're gone. So for parents, in some ways, you should embrace, maybe that's my number one from my list, learn to embrace the sadness and loss and grief that your children are experiencing, because you'll be there to help them grow and feel resilient, because you don't want their first great loss to happen when they're living away from home.
Oh, my. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's one of the greatest things that we can do for our children is to give them a safe place to make take these risks, right? And understand how to navigate on their own and be a person of influence for your children versus just an authority. And always pitch the ball back and say, you know, when they come to you, what do you think? What should I do? Like, what are you thinking? How do you see this going? It's giving them that moment to build that self-competency, that trust that you said. At the end of the day, we have to rely on ourselves. And that's the backbone of I told you about the desire and discipline. And the most powerful two-letter words that I tell my students is, if it is to be, it is up to me. We have to teach our kids that the quality of their lives is really their responsibility. But they have to become life smart. And that takes time and skill. And it starts at home.
All right. Number two.
Oh, I thought yours was number two with your embrace.
Oh, guys, remember, yeah, number two. So number three.
Okay. Number three. I would say number three for me is, you've heard of the three things that you should run through your head really quick before you speak is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? So that's kind of what you should always do before you open your mouth. Mm-hmm. And you will reframe a lot of things, or you'll remain silent. But I like to piggyback that with the rules that, Elizabeth, that we're talking about is to make sure that before helicoptering and before hovering and before getting involved, ask yourself, is it in alignment with my desired outcome, right? Is it contributing or contaminating to the health of my children's journey and our relationship? Mm-hmm. And the last thing is, will I regret or celebrate this decision?
The intervention I'm going to make.
So that's my number three.
I like that one. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Jill Avery, empowerment coach for young people and parents. And we're going through our top 10 kind of rules or tips to help parents guide and lead their children to their own autonomy and independence away from home. And again, at the beginning of the show, I said, I'm not talking about disconnection, because I think a lot of parents feel that when their kids leave home or go to college, that they lose that connection, that they aren't part of the family. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about autonomy, which means I can exist in relationship with you, but still make all of my own decisions and celebrate them with you. So that's what we're talking about today, is not how we disconnect and kick our kids out the door, but how we help them step into their own shoes as adults. So here's my number four, and you can boot it from the list, because again, I think it's another one that's a little controversial. Your child is not your best friend. Therefore,
hallelujah.
therefore, you need to have your own life and your own friends that you talk about personal things with. Your child might feel that you're their best friend and want to tell you everything. And that's great if you are an open person and your children feel like they can come and tell you things, but it should not be a reciprocal thing. Your child should not be your best friend. You might love them, think they're fabulous human beings, but they are not your friend. They are your children. And you always need to maintain some level of authority so that they feel like they can trust you, but not take care of you.
That is, thank you. I am so glad that you said that, because that is a danger zone right there, is when those lines are blurred. You are not, parents, we are not their best friend. We are their parents. We're their only parents. And our job is to equip them to learn how to fly on their own and to feel confident. So
not take care of us emotionally. That's the thing I think I worry about, is that so many of my students feel like they have to emotionally care for their parents, because I teach in the psych department. So those psych students are the ones that have been triangulated in their family, where their parents are talking to them about their marital issues or their divorce. So that is not okay in any circumstance.
No, we do not have the luxury as parents to emotionally get immersed in that. This is where technology for me is shown its ugly head, because they're texting, they're emailing, they're calling, they're sending podcasts, they're sending YouTube videos, they're sending TikToks. And it's overfed and undernourished kind of feeling. It's too much. It's 24/7 news. And these kids have to, they're checking their emails with their professors, they're checking it with their friends and their social medias. They're always on. It's exhausting. And parents know exactly where they are. They still have tracking devices on their kids, just because, well, it's just safe. It's just a safe thing to have. And, you know, maybe it is, but well, you have no freedom, right? You have no freedom. And, you know, send pictures when you go on a hike. I tell my daughter, she's right now in Vienna. She just landed in Vienna. And some of my family members are like, keep us posted. Send us some pictures. And I tell her, don't. Can you just be in the present? We'll see it when we get back. I just want to know that you made it there and that you'll be home safe.
Agreed. And I think that is, again, the technology is so convenient. And so it's very seductive to be able to say, well, it doesn't matter. It's just a quick text, or it's a Snapchat. But the problem is that a lot of adults and their children feel like if we don't do this all day long, we won't be close. And that's, to me, the greatest travesty in all this. Because you could go, I hope, a year and not see your child. Maybe, you know, she'd be gone for a year. When she came back, you would remember who she is. And I seriously believe a lot of the students think that if they don't talk to their parents every day, when they go home for Christmas break, people will forget them. And that is the big piece of social media and the FOMO and this belief that I don't exist unless people are seeing me every second of every day.
It's crazy.
The time's going so fast, I went out of time. We can just go on and on. All right, Jill Avery, parent empowerment coach, number five.
Okay, so number five. I have so many, but I'll go with this one. Okay. I think it's so important to focus on not yourself. Teach your children how to focus on planet, on the planet care, of being immersed in the non-device world. Connect with going on a hike. Be one with nature, because we have lost that. There are no, when you go into neighborhoods, you don't see kids playing, you know, hide and seek and kick the can and ding dong ditch. And it is quiet. People, it's all inside play. People are they're playing video games. That we have lost that connection. And we've lost the connection to teach our children how to take care of the planet. And I teach the parents, you should have one day a week minimum that it is all about, how do I give back to the greater good and to help Mother Earth? So that is, to me, is such an essential.
Number six from my end is where I think my husband and I would both say is our marginal fail, is money management skills. and allowing our kids to financially flop and dig their way out of a hole. We've done too much salving of financial decisions that have hurt us in the long term. And so trying to reevaluate how we interact with money and how we teach our children to interact with money, and to have them have to face the consequences of poor money decisions. Because again, back in the day, we had roommates and we lived on ramen and sometimes ran out of money and, you know, had to eat peanut butter. But no one, I don't think many people allow their children to live that way anymore.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. I'm with you. That's a great one. And it's something that I think should start younger.
Yes.
My kids are in their 20s and we're in the thick of that.
It's a tough one. And it's tough in our society that has credit and opportunities, and that it looks like everybody else is floating their kids constantly. You don't want to be the bad parent. But I will tell you, every family I know that stuck with the money management and had their kids buy their own car or get themselves out of debt or have a job, those children are much more balanced and stable emotionally than other young people I know. So that what looks like pain has paid off. All right. So that's number six, money management. Number seven.
Okay. Number seven. For me, the power of connection and community and being together. We are in this fractured society of what about me, and all focused on me, and the microscope is on me. And every single student that I work with, and this has been for almost 30 years, who've come through my door, it's about connection. They do not feel that they have their village, their tribe. They feel disconnected. They're down here with their phone, or, you know, scrolling on Instagram versus going out and going on that hike, inviting people to go. We need to have this sense of community and togetherness, and things that we did, right? We had block parties. We need to have more of these gatherings. And when I listened to Dr. Darsha
Narvaez.
Yeah, Narvaez. I loved that part that she was talking about, you know, community. Because that's exactly what I'm experiencing with these kids, that they don't feel they belong anywhere. And so we have to force our kids to get out of feeling safe and being at home with the parents, and also go take that travel trip with a group of people. You know, go get out of yourself and bond with people. Learn some social skills. So that's my number seven.
And I love that, because I think communication skills are the heart of success as human beings. And I would take to add on to that, when you get to college, wherever it is that your next launching thing is, but let's just say college, one of the reasons I don't want you texting your parents all day long, or your best friend from high school, or even keeping your high school partner, is because when you go to college, that's where you build your community. Join every club, talk to people in the dorm. I think that's one of the big challenges, is that the kids are coming to college, but they're not leaving home. They're totally in contact with home and barely at college, and things are happening around them. Like you said, they're on their phone. So as a parent, the best thing you can say to your child is, I'll talk to you every Sunday. I'd love to hear how your week went. I will talk to you on Sundays on the phone. During the week, you live wherever your college is. That is your place where your people are. Make friendships, develop support groups, and then I'll be here to talk to you every Sunday. What do you think about that, Jill?
Oh my gosh. We need to instill these boundaries. And it's, I always tell my students, you know, we get good at what we do a lot of. I mean, the reason they're so good on their devices is because they're always on their devices. And the way they get good at connection and way they get good at putting up boundaries is they have to actually do it. They have to be consistent with this. And parents have to be on board. Because yeah, if the parents keep doing it and the kids say, it's very insidious. You can, feeling close, you're not really feeling close to your parents. You're feeling dependent, or you're feeling, you know, or you're feeling angry and resentful. So there's a real fine balance. Yes. Real fine balance.
That's very true. Because students will say to me, I wouldn't text my parents all day long, but they freak out if they don't hear from me. Or I would rather not have to send Snapchats all day long because, but my parents get so weird. So this is a parent thing that, that as parents, we have to allow our children to feel independent from us. That means we have to feel independent from them, autonomous from them, and be okay having activities and things that we do that are separate from our kids. And I think that's a little counter to the culture. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Jill Avery. She is an empowerment expert, parenting coach. The name, if people want to find you, Jill, what is the name of your business so they can look it up, your website?
My website is myfamilyinflow.com.
Myfamilyinflow.com. And Jill does parenting coaching online. She works with young people, 16 to 26. So if any of these things resonate, or you feel like you need a little boot camp to prepare for your kids to be leaving home, you can contact Jill because I'm sure she'll be able to help you get there. All right. Number eight
is life essentials, self essentials. These are the big duhs, I call them.
Okay.
We have to set the example of, and the three does that I call them are really teaching your children. I don't care, even if they're in college or in their 30s, you still have to set the example of eating well, sleeping well, moving well. Those are our basics. Our breath is our life force. Knowing how to do breath exercises will completely calm you down in a second. These are things that are foundational that we just kind of cast to the side. So really teaching your children how to be competent in themselves with their own personal life skills within their own ecosystem. College, like, don't save them. Let them figure out that they have a temperature. Let them go to the go to the store, get their medicine. They have to learn these things. So really giving them the freedom and giving them the tools to do it on their own, of taking care of themselves.
My number nine, Smash, and I have to really think about the most important piece. And it's kind of bounced off of yours, of learning to find the doctor and make their own appointments. I'm gonna piggyback too. One, parents, don't ask your kids to come home in your times of crisis and miss exams or miss papers because the dog got sick or, you know, you had a surgery and the kids need to come home. If they're moving away and you want them to build a life separately, then let them do that. I think that's a big pull on young people. That really is challenging if they're going to be committed to being college students or have a job. And then having said that, also, if your kids don't get the classes that they think they need, or they're not in the major they want, at the end of the day, the college where your kid is supposed to go to will find them. They will find them. All of your hand-wringing about college coaches and essays and all those things are really just futile. Have your children fill out their applications, write the essay. The more genuine it is, they'll find the right place to go and they'll be better for it. And then let them go. Never contact the school and complain about the classes. So we've got 2 minutes to go because time goes so fast. Give us number 10, Jill.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Number 10, I would say, parents, the greatest gift you can give your children is to let them create a life that they love, is to promote what they love, to find out what it is that makes them excited and get behind that. Because at the end of the day, what makes them excited is going to make a world a better place and they will be happy and thriving. And that is Stephen Covey's Begin With the End in Mind. You want healthy, happy children, stand on their own 2 feet, and you want to have great, enjoyable relationships. Let them go and fly.
And to add on to that too, Jill, and I love that, is that, again, because your child is not your best friend, and really you shouldn't be their best friend, they might not like you all the way through this. Sometimes you know you're doing the best job parenting when your kids say to you, I don't like you. No other parent is this mean. No other parent makes their kids suffer like this. That to me are signs of good parenting, because the parenting reward comes when they are themselves parents and they come back to you and go, oh, I get it now. That's when you know that it worked. But if your kid's loving you all the way through their childhood and in their teens, you're not doing your job. They should be pushing back against you. They should be saying, this isn't fair. That's not right. And you hold your ground and go, yeah, it is. And someday you'll get it. But you have to be patient and wait for the someday as a parent.
That is true leadership. That is true leadership. And that's what we're here for. And it's like, pain of regret or the pain of discipline. We have to do the right thing for our kids for the long game, right? For that future. So yes, beautifully put.
I love that pain of regret because it is, you might feel good in the moment giving your kids everything, but man, to live with that decision when your child's still sleeping on the couch in the basement, that is a long life of regret. But the pain of having them be angry at you when you tell them you need to leave and go get a job or take off for the summer or stay at school and not come home, that momentary pain is going to be a lot less than, yeah, picking your child up off the floor. Jill Avery, thank you so much for spending this time with me. I loved it and I wish we could do another hour, another 10. So I hope you'll join me again next year for another round.
Oh, I would love it. It went by too quick. I have more tips.
All right. Well, so if people want to get more tips again, once again, how can they find you?
They can find me at my website, myfamilyinflow.com.
Fabulous. And you can find me at Elizabeth at thereluctanttherapist.com. Send me an email. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. Listen to previous shows, podcast our show, share it with your friends. But as always, thank you. Thank you for being a part of this community, serving the Central Coast, and listening and supporting KCBX.